right now we're watching and the unproductive drain the productive. And I think the $64 question is whether the productive sector of the economy is going to reassert itself. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Under the law, if I encourage you to borrow money, when I know that your job or is going to be transferred, or I know your income is going to fall because I as a large bank have access to that information and you don't, then that is potentially called fraudulent inducement. In other words, I have failed to disclose to you material information important to your ability to service that debt that I have and you don't. And so if I fail to disclose, that debt may have been fraudulently induced, at which point you may not owe me the money. You may not owe some or all. Now, what we're watching is a situation where a significant amount of the mortgages in this country since 1996, are potentially those which could be determined by a court of law to be fraudulently induced. Now, let's add to that situation, many of those mortgages were put into pools, and those pools created securities that were then sold to institutions all over the world. It's pretty clear that many of the companies who pooled and sold those securities knew that they were not as strong as they were presented to be. That is also potentially fraud or fraudulent inducement.
So this adds to this perception of it being an illegal operation, too.
Right.
I mean, every level.
We have a situation where a variety of courts all over the world could ultimately turn to the middlemen and bankers who've engineered this and say, nobody owes you money, but you owe the investors you sold these securities to a lot of money. And so the question is, so on both sides of the market, we have a fair amount of productive people, and in the middle, we have a fair amount of unproductive people who've engineered this. And the real question is, are the productive people going to turn and squeeze out the middlemen?
And by unproductive, you mean the people who are manipulating it, who actually don't produce anything themselves. They make money by making certain events happen.
Right, and let me give you an example because I think stories really help. At the end of the last housing bubble, when I left the administration, I became a member of the board of Sallie Mae, which is the Fannie Mae of student loans.
Okay.
And there were seven bank vice chairmen on the board, and it was interesting. At board meetings, our big question was, Citibank was essentially bankrupt. Would the Federal Reserve shut them down, or would it, under the too big to fail doctrine, would it somehow save them yet again? They'd lost so much money on real estate loans as a result of the real estate bubble in the 80s. And what proceeded to happen is what we're watching happen, we've watched happen many times. The Fed started to lend money in the short market at low rates, and the banks could borrow both from the Fed and in a variety of ways, money at very low rates, and proceed to buy Treasury securities at huge profits. So, for example, during that period, I had a lunch with one of the bankers from one of the banks that was solvent. They had $110 billion of Treasuries on their balance sheet, which they were financing at a cost of capital that was 5.5% less, and they were generating $6 billion a year from just borrowing in the short market and lending back to the Treasury in the long market. Now, let me explain what this means if you're a taxpayer. Why did the taxpayers need to give the banking system their credit? Because they're using FDIC insurance. We're guaranteeing it to do this. So we're giving them our credit to raise the capital, and then they're using that to loan it back to us at 550 basis point higher. So we're giving them our credit. They're using it to raise our deposits at 3%, and then we're borrowing our own money back, at 8.5% and paying taxes to support that. Well, that one bank was making about $6 billion a year, but we proceeded to float, you know, Citibank's and all the troubled banks, you know, back up into profitability. Now, here's why this is important. Let's say you and I are competitors, and every time you make a mistake, you get tailed out through the back door, and every time I make a mistake, I have to pay for it. Now, meantime, if you do something right, you get to keep the profits. You don't have to pay back your bail back, your bailout. But every time I, you know, and every time I do well, I get to, you know, instead use that money to finance, you know, the costs of my losses from the last mistake.
Right.
Well, it doesn't take very long to figure out who's going to end up owning whom, right?
Right.
Well, because you have a get-out-of-jail-free card for all your mistakes.
And stories are helpful, and I am the dumbest guy I know, so...
No, I don't think so.
So stories with bunnies are particularly helpful, especially if the bunnies are wearing jackets and pants. So just help me understand that last part there.
Well,
so
who's
the person, who's the one that's getting the bailout and who's the one that isn't? I mean, if you had to put like a name to it, who's getting that backdoor bailout and who's the one that's being penalized for playing by the rules?
Okay, the guys last week, the guys who were getting the bails out were the guys who couldn't finance or needed to finance their positions in the mortgage markets. So it was Goldman Sachs, it was Bear Stearns, it was the big New York Fed banks. You know, if you want a list of who's really doing this, if you go to my website at Solari.com, we have a section at Solari.com/banks where we have a list of the top 20. We call them the Tapeworm 20, the 20 largest banks. The list is as of 2004, those banks had profits that year of $89 billion, and American households had deficits of $342 billion. And that's a tapeworm when they're making money while you're losing money.
Right.
So
right.
All of American households are losing $342 billion, and they've got $89 billion of profits.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I have a question there, but I can go back to it. So if you had to wrap up, I can understand.
And it's important to understand it's those same banks that are running the government's accounts. And that's important because let's say the average American household, when I did those numbers, was paying about $5,400 in federal taxes. Well, if you look at the amount of money that's disappearing in the, you know, when we talk about the missing money from the federal government, you know, it's about $5,000 a year. I mean, it's a big chunk of what everybody's paying in taxes. So these guys are making $89 billion while we're losing to $342 billion, but we're also paying another, you know, say $1.2 trillion that year, or $1.2 or $1.6 trillion of federal taxes, and a lot of it's disappearing out the back door, you know, of the guys who are managing the federal accounts. That kind of money can't leave unless your banker executes the transactions.
Is the Tapeworm 20 the people who are they behind moving this money into Asia? Are they they?
That's the $64 question. Who is the they? But what is important to understand as a matter of accountability is the banks who execute those transactions are accountable for executing illegal transactions, no matter who they are.